So dumb, so dumb, so dumb, so! Hey! Hey!
Hey there, Pounders. It's JRW and Seema here with podcast number 2 of the JRW and Seema Show. Today we are going to recap the last week. So that would be, let's recap December. How's that? We're going to talk about issues and things that have come up on the site and in the games. And how you doing, Seema?
Doing well. We're actually 5 games since we did the first 1/5 of the season for the Spurs, aren't we?
That's really odd the way that keeps on coming up. If only I was planning it. That would be really cool.
If only we hadn't discussed this beforehand. This is not a 1/5 or a 2/5 podcast, though. This is simply an evaluation of the current state of the Spurs. Bottom line theme of today, JRW, what do we know about the 2010-2011 Spurs team as of today?
Well, thank you for asking me. I had a little comment that popped up in your last article on Pounding the Rock, the day the NBA stood still, and Lion Zion, at the end of his comment on your story, said, "I'm not sure of our true caliber. It's too early in the season, and most teams haven't hit their true stride yet." So what we know about this year's Spurs team at this point of the season, let's look at it in the context of what we usually know about the Spurs team at this point of the season. Let's look at the last 3 or 4 seasons. What we know is that what we're currently seeing is good performance, and we're expecting great to exceptional performance later on. In the last few years, what we've seen at the beginning of the season is poor to average performance, and everybody's saying, be calm, be cool, it's going to be okay, we're going to get there, they'll be great at the playoffs. So what we have is a net gain. If we're starting from good, we can go to great to exceptional, because we know that we were starting at poor before and we were getting there anyway. That's the first thing. The second thing, the biggest difference in this team so far, and we're nearly 25% of the way through the entire season, if you care about those kinds of numbers. I mean, 1/4, 1/4, I mean, who cares about that anyway? It's not like it's
25 has a 5 in it, so that's huge for you. But keep going.
It is 5 squared. There you go. Okay, so the second difference, and honestly the biggest difference in the team so far this year, we are making our free throws. And no, I'm not worried about jinxing the team by talking about it. Seema, tell me exactly what the numbers are.
First off, as a resident expert on Mojo, I'll tell you, you should be worried about jinxing the team, and it's slightly disappointing that you're so cavalier in your attitude. But this year, we're shooting free throws in an 80% clip compared with last year at 74%. So we're definitely, you know, doing a lot better significantly on free throws.
And there have been a few games this year where free throws have not just kept us in the game, but are very likely the reason that we won. So this is huge. It speaks to the players' commitment to continue to practice. It speaks to the work that Chip England's done with the team. And also, I think it speaks to just how often Manu's gotten to the line. Of course, he's hitting it like 89.4, 90%. He's like right there in the 90s. So,
you know, it's probably also contributing to point differential as well. Last year, we had a 5.1 point differential, meaning that we scored an average per game of 5.1 points more than our opponent did. This year, we're up to 8.9. We lead the league this year. So it probably is a significant impact on that, not to mention, you know, obviously a significant impact as well as our up-tempo play.
Good point. I like it. I like making free throws, and we've been busting on the team all year long. I know I have been in the game threads saying how very un-Spurs-like they are this year. There's a lot of un-Spurs-like things going on, not the least of which is free throw shooting. So I think this is this year's team. I don't think they are being, for a quarter of the season, I don't think they're being someone that they're not at the line. I think we'll be able to expect this kind of shooting from them, and honestly, it's one of those things that you can control more than you can control anything else by practice and mindset at the line. So I'm loving it.
Massive quads. You know, I look back through the stats as well, and we had talked about this before we got on here. You mentioned all the categories in which we're greater. There's a lot of these categories, if you really look at the stats. Obviously, the point differential, we're up, you know, nearly 4 points this year in point differential than we were last year. The offense, this is going to come as a no surprise to anybody. Last year we averaged 101.4 points a game. This year, 106.7 a game, a full 5.5 more, nearly. So that's contributing, obviously, or at least influenced by the up-tempo speed. The biggest one that I think people are aware of or see this year, we are leading the league in three-pointers. Our team three-point percentage last year, 35.8%. This year, 40.4%. Quite a big jump. It doesn't sound like a major switch, but over the course of an 82-game season, if we sustain this same pace, it's pretty substantial to be shooting 40% from three as a team. Now,
I got to step in here. I got to say two things. First of all, it's not just the percentage; it's how many more threes we're shooting this year per game than last year. And the second thing is, you keep bringing stats like this every week we do these, and people are going to think that somebody's possessed you, like Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something. I mean, like, you're actually caring about stats. All right, I'll shut up. Go ahead.
Verbally, I'm all about stats. Now, when we're typing and we're on PTR and a game thread, it's just all about wisecracks and sounding like an idiot. But normally, I'm all about stats. And the reason being is because you can definitely explain and you can see the difference in the team. You mentioned three-point attempts. Last year, we took 18.9 per game. This year, 21.7. Nearly three more per game three-point attempts that we're taking. So that accounts for quite a bit of that. The biggest stat that I've seen, and I was blown away when I found this, turnover differential. What do you know about turnover differential?
Number of turnovers forced minus number of times you turn the ball over.
Exactly. The amount of turnovers we commit versus the amount we allow. Last year's turnover differential was plus one. Horrific, but pretty much average and right on pace with the rest of the league, meaning that we commit plus one more turnovers per game than we allow in that same game. If we committed 14, on average, our opponent had 13. That was last year. This year, we're negative 1.7, meaning
that we're forcing 1.7 more turnovers per game than we're actually giving up ourselves.
So if you compare the two teams, there's nearly a three turnover swing in the 2 years. And that's astronomical. This team is simply protecting the ball a lot better. We're shooting the ball a lot better. In nearly every statistical category we look at, other than Tim Duncan minutes, has increased substantially.
Wow, that's outstanding right there.
It almost looks to be a statement year from Pop. There's so much difference in the stats between this year's team and last year's team that it looks almost like not only the players, but Popovich is also trying to make a statement here. You believe that Pop's had some statement games. What games, plain and simple, are you talking about, and what specific things led you to that?
Yes, Seema, I do believe that Pop has had a statement game, and I've got to point to the last game, the loss to the Clippers in L.A., Josh and I was talking after that game, and he said, "I don't think there's anything wrong with Tony." My theory, well, he came out of the game at the very beginning of the third quarter after he turned it over. Pop immediately ran to the bench and told Hill to get in the game, and we didn't see TP again in that game after that. And I realized that the Clippers game for Pop was a statement game. Plain and simple, take Tony out and leave Bonner in. It was a statement game. We can't understand the statement, though, because we don't know what the question was. As fans, we could watch every minute of every game, read every quote from every article. We could examine each bit of analysis while poring over box scores and stat charts until we'd memorize them, and would still be missing information vital to being able to understand the conversation taking place between the coach and the team. Look, there's a lot that we can understand from watching this team on the court. from watching the way they interact with each other and the way they interact with the coaching staff. But there's a what we see is the tip of the iceberg. There is 90% of what goes on happens off the court. The way they interact with each other in the locker room, the way that Popovich talks to each of them in practices, the way the coaching staff works with them in shoot-arounds, and the way that he talks to the team in team meetings, the way they're on the bus together and on the plane together and all the stuff that goes on with that, we have no idea. We think we have a great grasp of it, and we're able to figure out a whole lot of stuff. But when he makes a statement with the player, a lot of times we read huge implications into that. And I think there were a number of people saying Tony needs to go on IR or Tony just needs to sit down until he gets his head right. Look, Popovich has been coaching these guys for so long. He knows them inside and out. And Tony played an excellent game tonight. He's been all right in the last few games, but tonight he was exceptional. 28 minutes, 19 points on 9 for 14 shooting. He made 1 out of 2 free throws, had a couple rebounds, 9 assists, 2 turnovers, and 2 fouls. And when he was plus 13 in his 28 minutes, that's not just good, that's exceptional.
Yeah, he's playing, if you've studied Tony's stats for the year and you really watch him, howbeit from a couple of performances in which, you know, like you said, Pop's had to make a statement, Tony really is playing like one of the top 3 point guards in the league. And he's doing it quietly, without much acclaim, without much attention to his game. You don't hear his name mentioned in that top 3 argument anymore, but he definitely is putting up the numbers. He's leading this team from a point guard perspective. Like no other team. I mean, he really is putting on a show this year. And I see, you know, you mentioned the statement game from Pop concerning Tony. I see a lot more, you know, all of us, I don't think there's one person that doesn't clamor for Tony to be more consistent. I see him being mostly consistent this year. He's a lot more consistent this season than I ever remember Tony Parker being.
9 assists, Seema. 9 assists in a single game. And he didn't even play 30 minutes.
Right.
That right there just talks to the way that he's focused on the game. There was that play that he dropped a dime to Splitter on the break. And previous years he might have just taken that himself and not even worried about, you know, whether or not he would have a turnover. He just slid it right in there to Splitter, and it was gorgeous. And that is the kind of play that we're getting out of our point guard this year.
Right, right. Well, he, you know, and I'm searching through all the numbers here. He's 14th in the league this year in assists right now. Manu was 26th in the league last year. Tony wasn't even in the top 40. So that ought to give you at least a small picture of how well he's distributing the ball. That's another major change that's taking place. You know, we talked about statement games, and we talked about Pop adapting and his style of play and the flow adapting. One more thing I wanted to run by you that occurred to me. Watching this week, I was watching NBA TV, and there was an interview with Richard Jefferson and Steve Smith. And a lot of you guys might remember Steve Smith from his brief time as a Spur. We brought him his first ring as a Spur. And Steve Smith was interviewing RJ and kind of teasing him, kind of ribbing him a little bit and just laughing because RJ made the comment, well, it's taken me a year to really understand the Spurs system. The Spurs have one of the more complex systems in the league. And Smith, you know, really laughed, and they both shared a good kind of former Spur and current Spur kind of laugh, knowing that they've both been in that system and that comment was dead on. You and I have wondered, and we've all generally wondered, why Pop is allowing such a new un-Spur-like fast pace and up-tempo, and we pretty much rationalized it by simply saying, you know, he's older, he's less stubborn, he doesn't care so long as we get to the playoffs. I actually think it may be more now after watching this interview. I'm kind of slowly coming around to a hypothesis or a theory, if you will, of thinking that Pop just realized that RJ, even a player just like RJ, someone who is a straight-line slasher, a shooter, a player like that struggles enormously with the Spurs system. The Spurs system is not built for a player like that. Mm-hmm. We have whined for years about not having a Gist type of player that would just cram the hole and thunderously, monstrously dunk the ball, and just an exciting, media-friendly type of, you know, highlight reel type of player.
Pop Smith's a Bonsu.
Right, exactly, Bonsu. It's the major reason for that is not because we're old school and we like, you know, real high up shorts and just the old type of basketball. It's mostly because our system's not built for that. Our schemes and designs are not conducive to effective production from a straight line slasher shooter. I think Pop also realized that for us as a team to be successful, our success hinged solely on RJ filling that void that we talked about last time of the fourth consistent producer.
Mm-hmm.
You put that thought together with the realization that RJ is having a monster year right now. I think Pop realized our system must be slightly altered solely to allow RJ to more effectively be himself, and thus guaranteeing RJ's success and also guaranteeing that the team could be more effectively be itself. Pop saw that not only did RJ need a more up-tempo, gloves-off pace to contribute and ensure victories for the team, he also saw that there were other players already on board who could quickly and exceptionally adapt to this style as well. George, Gary, Blair, Splitter, Dice, my sweet Manu, allowing the pace to increase, especially when you're not going to be relying on Tim Duncan for the first four-fifths of the season anyway. And by relying on Tim Duncan, I'm talking about getting down the floor, forming sets, allowing Tim to work or to kick the ball out. Allowing that to increase would not only allow RJ to contribute effectively in ways that he could, it would add one additional strategic style of play weapon for the postseason as well. I think Get Off My Lawn adapted slightly, realizing that it was needed for RJ alone. And in so doing, he realized that it was the only way for us to be successful this year and potentially a Western Conference threat. It's not even so much adaptation, JRW, as it is brilliant coaching. If you think back, if you're a football fan, an American football fan, and you hear stories about prolific star receivers that come to college as defensive players, as safeties, as free safeties, as, you know, as defensive backs, guys that had never been receivers and never wanted to, but were average players at best for a short time. And then somebody in that college theorized, based on examination and based on watching their gifts, that they were best suited at, say, a position of wide receiver, and they were given a shot. Then you see that player, that receiver, go on to become some major star, some memorable receiver. Bottom line, when you have oranges, stop trying to make lemonade. The man who sees a lack of lemons and allows an orange to flourish for the greater good and the orange's good and recognizes the need for the orange Julius. Well, maybe I'm going too deep into my metaphor here.
You know what? You go ahead and say Crabtree. I know as much of a Red Raider fan as you are, it's just killing you not to say Crabtree at this point.
Well, I don't want to be a homer, but the reality is, and that's a good example, when Michael Crabtree came to Texas Tech as a player, he came as a defensive player. He was an average player at best, barely recruited out of high school. The coaching staff just kind of threw one up in the air and said, you know, we're going to put this guy at receiver. But long story short, he went on to become one of the NCAA's most prolific and memorable receivers. And like I said, when you have oranges, you stop trying to make lemonade. Yeah, and I think Popovich realized that, looked at RJ and realized, you know what, if we're going to win, this guy's got to be successful. The only way this guy's going to be successful is if we open up our game. And that brings us to today.
Well, it's a great point you make, and I love orange juice, so I'm glad they're not having to push something out of all the lemons that they're getting. They don't have lemons right now, and the switch of the style and the way that the team is playing with a valid and well executing fourth option, seeing RJ even operate from the post this year. And being successful, seeing Tony Parker in the post the other night and being successful, it's really exciting.
Let me tell you something, JOW. I friggin' love lemonade. I really do. and I don't mind a switch to orange juice if it means that, you know, you're going to be healthier, if it means you're going to win games. Mm. I have no problem with that. But I would caution you not to abandon your love of lemonade as well, because come postseason, I think we're going to see a lot less orange juice.
Well, postseason, all of your options become more limited at that point. And if we have to wind up looking in the fridge and seeing a whole lot more lemons, the team knows what to do with them. But it's nice to know that we're not trying to shove, you know, a square peg in a round hole, if you will. We've got a lot of options in the way that teams are playing us in the regular season. And it's just great to see the ball movement that we saw tonight against the Warriors and against the Hornets. Just the amazing amount of clean looks that the team was getting against New Orleans was just absolutely crazy.
It was, yeah, it was absolutely, it was almost embarrassing to watch that last New Orleans game. And of course they came out, "Oh, we're so confused and we're distracted by the NBA buy-in." Shut up. We owned you on the. We absolutely destroyed them on the floor. It was, even as a Spurs fan, it was just almost painful to watch. I texted C-Money, and I think I had mentioned to you too, and I think I texted Bella as well, that, you know, I don't know if you're watching this, but you might want to turn it on because we're up 30 something points in the second quarter right now. So it's been an interesting year to watch. And as you and I said the last podcast, the beautiful thing, that kind of the star behind the curtain here, is the minutes per game. We absolutely are doing what we're doing. We're leading the league in winning, or if you will, or point differential. We're dominating teams better than anybody else is, and we're doing it playing the minimum amount of minutes. Tony Parker right now is averaging 33.3 minutes per game. That's 64th in the league. Mm. Let me give you a short, quick list of players who are playing far more minutes than Tony Parker. Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, Kyle Gasol, Amari Stoudemire, Chris Paul, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade. Lots of players that are going to be counted on as contributors towards the end of the year are seeing far more court time right now, and thus are going to be far more susceptible to injuries, to fatigue at the end of the year. Tony's got 33.3 minutes per game right now. Manu, 32.6, number 74 in the league. So we're in a position. Tim Duncan, I don't think, is not even, he's not, you can't even find his stat anywhere. He's playing such a minimal amount of time. We're going to be well rested. We're going to be gelled as a team. I still, you know, again, sounding like a homer, I still feel so good right now about being 18-3 and being right where we are.
Yeah, it feels great. And honestly, I think it's time to give out the JRW Gold Star of the Week. And as fantastic as Duan, yes, I'm going to say fantastic.
You better give it to Manu. You better give it to Manu.
Manu is getting the gold star of the season so far. Manu is Manu. He's the sickness, and there is no other. Blair had a fantastic game tonight. 5 of 8, 15 points, 13 rebounds, and 27 minutes. But I just love the way that George Hill, our Cubits, our Albatross, just love the way he's been playing tonight. 27 minutes, 7 of 16 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3. He had a rebound, 2 assists, a steal, 2 blocks, 1 turnover for 17 points and a plus 10 on the night. So the JRW Gold Star goes to George Hill this week. George, don't spend it all in one place.
Manu will allow that.
There you go.
George has been playing well. Mine will allow it.
And so what's coming up on Pounding the Rock over the next few weeks? Josh Geyer is putting together an X's and O's analysis, getting in some technical details. I've got a lexicon update. We've got some new terms I'm going to throw out there onto the lexicon, but first I'm going to post them so everybody can look them over and discuss them. I've got a post that I'm going to do on Chip England and the way that he works with the team before the games, just everything it takes to be a shot doctor. Cap Hill has a Christmas post that's coming up, and that should carry us through the next week or so on Pounding the Rock with the big stories that are coming up. This coming Tuesday, we're going to have a number of posts. It's the second off day. We've got a game on Sunday. We'll have a recap for Monday, and then Tuesday is going to be the day for some extra special posts. So everybody, make sure that you're hitting Pounding the Rock on Tuesday, even though there's not going to be a recap up and there's not a game until Wednesday.
Well, see, and there might also be a forthcoming podcast with Sven Nader, George Gervin, as co-host with JRW. So you always want to tune in to make sure that something new or exciting might not pass you by.
Everybody, make sure that you sign up for Twitter on @PoundingTheRock. Make sure you friend Pound the Rock on Facebook. We let you guys know when the new stories are out. That way we won't have things like RX21 wondering whether Pounding the Rock is doing podcasts at all in the game thread tonight. Yes, yes, this is the second JRW SEMA podcast for Pounding the Rock. Go ahead and check out the first one if you haven't already. It's a fifth of Spurs. It was posted on the 1st of December. And that's it for tonight. SEMA, sign off for us.
You sound like you get paid to pimp out and endorse other podcasts. We don't get paid at all. This is just we're in between games of World of Warcraft, and we figure we do this together. Thanks for having me. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Bye, everybody. We're going to find you. Run until that. Run until that. Run until that.